Adventures in Research. A young boy's curiosity may be a definite strain on his father and the family, but one young lad's inquisitive determination put him on the road to fortune and a place in the role of America's great inventors. And in a way, it all came about because of a broken slate. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science produced as a public service in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And today, telling you the story of Thomas Blanchard and the slate that didn't break. The year is 1798 on the outskirts of the town of Sutton, Massachusetts, where a farmer named Samuel Blanchard is having some domestic trouble with one of his younger sons.
And you stay in your room, Thomas, until you can behave.
Please, Father, must you shout so? I'm trying to go over these accounts from the factory, and you know how easy I have those headache spells.
Well, I'm sorry, Edmund, but somebody has to teach your younger brother some manners.
Well, I've warned you and Mother. You're spoiling that boy. Many's the time I've told you that. Just turning him into a worthless good-for-nothing. Sending him to school. And here he is, a big, strapping boy of 11. Why, when I was 11, I was apprenticed to Master Dowd.
I know, Edmund, I know.
And now look where I am. One of the biggest tack manufacturers in the colonies. In the States. And I didn't have to go to school to do it.
Times have changed, Edmund. After all, Thomas is only 11. But why he does things like set fire to the old summer kitchen is more than I can understand.
What?
Oh, it was only a small fire. But my gracious, it might have burned down the whole farmhouse.
Well,
it all began the day I took him into Sutton. Your mother and I promised him if he did well in school and quit breaking the slates...
Breaking the slates? What on earth for?
Hanged if I know, son. The young'un seems to get nervous when he's called on to recite off his slate and bang, drops it and it breaks in 1,000 pieces.
If I would have had the opportunity for schooling when I was his age, I wouldn't have broken my slate.
Well, so for a week he broke nary a slate. So I took him into Sutton and told him I'd buy him a knife.
Oh, Father, you're spoiling that boy.
Well, you know how he always is hankering for a knife or a gimlet. Well, we was riding past the blacksmith's shop, and young Thomas's eyes got big as cartwheels. He'd never set eyes on a blacksmith's shop before. A few days later, while I was riding over to pick you up and bring you home here, why, the young'un lit out for the summer kitchen, stole some red-hot clinkers from the stove, and built himself a forge for welding iron.
I'm shocked. Absolutely aghast.
Yep, so am I. Why, he didn't have that forge hot enough to try to weld iron. He bent it all right, but now...
But, Father, a young child of 11 setting fire to the summer kitchen.
Well.
Oh, I've warned you, Father. Sending that boy to school will be the ruination of him. Now, why not apprentice him to me? Just have him bound over and I'll put him to work making tacks for me.
Well, Edmund, I've told you before, I'd like the boy to get some schooling. He's smart as a whip. Why, imagine setting up a forge and all just from seeing it once.
Now, who can that be?
Let me take a peek out the window. Oh, my gracious sakes, that's Mr. Ebert, the teacher at the school. I wonder... Coming. Just a minute, Mr. Ebert. Well, Mr. Ebert, this is a pleasure.
A pleasure for you, perhaps, but not for me.
Huh?
Mr. Blanchard, I can stand it no longer. Something will have to be done about your son, Master Thomas.
You mean he...
Yes. Today, another slate. Bang, crash. It missed my great toe by a matter of inches.
Right sorry to hear it, Mr. Eford.
Something will have to be done. He has shattered over 2 dozen slates in the past month, and all he wants to do is make things. He's not interested in figures nor arithmetic. Nor the multiplication tables.
You see, Father? Now, if you will just have Thomas bound over to me, I'll put him to work at the tack factory. and that will be an end to this ruination. You see, Thomas, it's as easy as that. When the thin piece of iron is held in the vise, you hit it with a hammer, like this, flattening the top of the iron into a head for the tack. Now, after you hammer out 100, you stop and put them into this box. So remember to keep counting each one so there'll be just 100. No more and no... Well, what are you staring at?
Sounds very slow and tiresome. There must be an easier way.
You'll start no fires in my shop, Brother Thomas. And get to work. Slow and tiresome indeed. And remember, count each tack from 1 to 100. Now, get busy. You only have 10 hours left today. Well, Brother Thomas, how is it coming? Are you counting each tack? You must be sure there are just 100. What was that? That bell.
Oh, I got tired of counting, Brother Edmund. So I put this ratchet wheel on the top of the heading tool. Every time I hit the tack with the hammer, the wheel moves one notch.
Well, I
When it moves the 100th time, the hammer hits the bell, and I know that makes 100. It's much easier than counting.
The idea, the very idea. Wasting time on such foolish projects. My, my. Well, the devil finds work for idle hands to do.
And I've been thinking of a machine that might stamp out these tacks instead of doing it all by hand. Already, I think I...
Think? I'm not boarding and rooming you for thinking. A machine that makes tacks is obviously impossible. It takes a knack to make a tack, and no machine can do it. Remember that now. It takes a knack to make a tack, and no machine can do it. And when you get home tonight, you'll write that 100 times on your slate.
For 6 years, Thomas Blanchard quietly worked on his tack-making machine, changing, improving, discarding. Finally, it was completed and successful. One merely placed the iron into a hopper, and by applying the driving power, two knives cut off the necessary length, and with the aid of a steel finger, a tool delivered the blow which formed the head. Blanchard had his tack-making machine patented and sold the rights for $5,000 and bade a fond adieu to his brother. The news of his inventiveness had already spread through the states. The American Industrial Revolution was on, and men like young Blanchard were needed.
So you see our problem here at the Army, Mr. Blanchard.
I do indeed, Colonel. The gun barrels must be welded under a hammer and then chipped and filed to fit into the stock itself.
Yes. Now, the cost is extremely high. If we could have a machine that would...
This is the lathe which turns out the barrel?
It is, Mr. Blanchard.
Colonel, I think I have an answer. Now, watch closely, my man, because you will be working this lathe. I've added to the gun lathe here a simple cam motion, controlled by a lever. This one here. And this will turn out the flats and ovals of the gun butt much quicker and far less expensive than one can do it by hand.
You hear that, Toby? Looks like this Blanchard fella's taking your jobs away from you. Well, he can't take my job away from me. I turn gun stocks, and he can't invent a machine that'll do that.
I am not so sure about that. Let me think it over.
Huh?
Within a month, Thomas Blanchard had devised a gun lathe which carved so neat a gun stock, it hardly required a touch of the sandpaper. When securing his patent, he exhibited his machine at the War Department.
I say, Blanchard, that is neat.
I don't imagine you could turn out a lathe that would turn out a frigate, do you?
Sure, Admiral. If you will furnish the block from which to turn it.
It was from this that Blanchard devised his greatest invention, the copying lathe. Using a finished object as a pattern, the lathe copied this pattern exactly, producing a second object from a rough block of wood. A sliding carriage had a cutting and a copying wheel, which were mounted in a line with each other on the carriage. The copying wheel pressed against the pattern and followed its shape, forcing the cutting wheel to act on the rough block of wood in exact duplicate. In addition to this invention, Thomas Blanchard added others. One of the first steam carriages, one of the early steamboats, one of the first railroad engines. It was while working on his steamboat that he made a most peculiar discovery.
Look here, Stephen. This is exactly what I mean. The knee timbers for the hulls of the steamboats are too often weak and faulty, like this one.
And you pay a high price for them, too. You see, Mr. Blanchard, they have to steam these timbers to bend them.
And when they do, they are badly cracked and splintered right here, on the outer curve.
I don't know what they can do about it.
Nor I. But maybe I can do something about it. Maybe a machine which could bend timbers without cracking them.
Nothing was too small to escape Thomas Blanchard's curiosity. He gave it a try, and he invented a machine which bent steam timbers quite free from fracture. It was devised of two curved links into which the timber was held by a stout screw. Others before him had stretched the timber, thereby weakening it. What Blanchard did was merely compress it, pulling the one curved link up against the locked timber, bending it to the proper curvature without doing it any harm at all. This machine for bending wood, oddly enough, was Blanchard's most lucrative invention. Its application to ship timbers brought him almost $200,000. And it had other uses. Handles for plows and other farm implements, fellows for wheels, and frames for pictures. And one of the strangest uses was a request from a Pennsylvania manufacturer.
And Mr. Blanchard, they tell me you can invent anything.
Not quite, Mr. Curry. I'm just curious.
Well, they tell me that, too. And my problem is this. I manufacture slates. Square slates for schools.
Slates? Yes, I've heard of them.
Well, did you ever know they break easy? Just drop them easy-like. They land on one of the wooden corners of the frame, and the frame falls apart and the slate breaks.
Mr. Curry, I know full well.
Well, what I want to know is it possible to invent a frame that won't break apart?
Well, I don't see why not. It always does happen when the corners hit.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why we couldn't break off the corners of the slate first, like this.
What are you doing?
Well, you see, we make the slate oval-shaped instead of square.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all we need to do is bend a piece of wood to fit that oval shape, and I guarantee you it won't break if you drop it.
Say, that would do it, wouldn't it? Mr. Blanchard, how much will it cost me to have the rights to manufacture these oval slates?
Give me 5% royalty of your sales.
It's a bargain, Mr. Blanchard, and thank you.
The pleasure's all mine, Mr. Curry. I never thought I'd live to see the day I could make money by breaking a slate.
And make money he did, for Thomas Blanchard's royalties for the first year's sales of the oval slates came to over $2,500. And more than that, with it, one of America's pioneer inventors settled an old score. Yes, though he contributed many useful things to a young and growing nation, and brought many improvements to early manufacturing, none of his inventions, none of them, gave Thomas Blanchard quite so much personal satisfaction as the slate that didn't break. And that's today's Adventure in Research, produced in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. These programs are broadcast to armed forces personnel overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week for another transcribed story of science on Adventures in Research.